Okay, so as Erica mentioned, I'm going to be talking today about a program we have. It's a patient navigation and survivor support program at San Ysidro Health Center. And most importantly, we do not have any disclosures. We don't have to disclose any financial relationships for this presentation. Okay, so as I mentioned, I'm from San Ysidro Health Center. For those of you who are unfamiliar with us, I'm assuming that's many of you, we are a large-scale community-based health center located, well, mostly in South Bay and now in Central Region, but our main clinic is located less than 1 mile from the U.S.-Mexico border. Thank you. Our population is predominantly Latino. About 84% of our patients are identified as Latino, and most of them are monolingual Spanish speakers. 69% of our patients live at or below 100% federal poverty level, and 20% of our patients are actually uninsured. And the program I'm talking about today works with the National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program, so all of the women that we're working with are uninsured women. Before talking about the patient navigation program, I need to give you a little bit of background of how that started. The program started as a byproduct of the PODER program, which is our education and outreach program. PODER stands for Promotoras, Outreach, Detection, Education, and Referral. The program itself was started in 2003 to address the large disparities with breast and cervical cancer that are found in the Latina community. And the interesting thing about that, and I'm sure a lot of you are here for women's health, so some of you may know this, Latinas are actually diagnosed with cancer less often, but they have a higher mortality rate, so they die more often from the disease. And a lot of that is due to late detection. As you can see here, only 54% of eligible women, Latina women, are actually getting regular screening mammograms. And that's actually up considerably from a few years ago, which was 38%. So we're working in the right direction, but we still have a huge gap. The program itself was designed to provide free education and outreach in the Latina community. Initially started as a community health worker-based program and has moved into a trained health educator, but seems to have the same impact. The program was to provide free screening services and also have a case management approach, which is also part of the National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program, and that we hoped would improve compliance rates. Now, the program itself, since 2003, November of 2003, has screened 8,100 women, and of those women that were screened, we have 122 who were diagnosed with breast cancer during that time, which seems low for the amount of women, but it actually is a huge impact, and 122 is still too many women to be diagnosed with breast cancer. Once we started seeing those numbers, we were trying to figure out how could we support those women specifically, because in South San Diego County, which has such a huge Latina population, there were absolutely no support services. There were no Spanish-speaking support groups. We didn't have any other patient navigation programs at the time. There wasn't anything that could allow the women to express themselves or learn about the disease and how they could treat the disease during that time period. So we decided to start the first Spanish-speaking support group we called Mujeres con Poder, or Women with Power. And that started in 2004. And it was modeled after the wellness community model. The idea of the program was to promote a comfortable and safe environment for women to be able to talk about fears and questions and have support of other women. We used a bilingual, well, we currently use still, a bilingual bicultural breast cancer survivor, and we're very lucky, a woman named Sarah Feinstein, she's very well known in San Diego County, is a double breast cancer survivor and has been facilitating support groups for several years now, has many years of experience. So she has worked with the women to promote an environment of empowerment and support. She wanted to, again, use the wellness community model, which promotes decrease in isolation, the proactive patient approach. And ideally, we wanted to empower women in the group to learn more about the treatment process and be able to take a more active role in their healing. And we also did things such as education, lymphedema education, nutrition counseling, et cetera. And the last part is we expanded the support group to include relaxation and visualization. And because as well, there is often a stigma associated in the community with support groups. We started doing activity components to that. So we added a arts and crafts component once a month. It's the support group itself is twice a month, to allow women to feel like they're not necessarily there for a support group, but they're actually doing an activity. And we found that the numbers increased during those classes or during those support groups. And based on that knowledge, we wanted to expand what we were offering for the women. So we started the Patient Navigation and Survivor Support Program. So what that included was and is some yoga classes, cooking classes, which actually have been the most successful, the Cooking for a Healthier Lifestyle, not associated specifically with breast cancer, but it does allow our patients to come together. And if they want to talk about issues, they can, but it's not a structured type of environment. And we had the music therapy, which we are no longer doing, unfortunately, but we also have De Mujer a Mujer Si Se Puede, which is a peer support program, allowing a patient who is newly diagnosed to partner with a patient who had participated in the Poder program and gone through treatment process. They had to be a year out before they could be in that program. So with all of that, we still found that we were needing additional support for the women. Part of that was because the case managers who were helping the women after they were screened and diagnosed were starting to feel that they needed more support. There were a lot of women who, because of the language barriers or other issues, they needed additional support in trying to figure out how to get to their treatment, what income programs are available for them, financial programs are available based on their income, and other types of support services. So based on additional research that a patient navigation approach increases compliance and access to care, we developed the Patient Navigation Program. That has probably been the most successful of all of these. I'm very lucky that my patient navigator is here, Maria Elena, and she's gonna be talking for a few minutes when I'm done. But the program itself was designed to address the need for the cancer patients and the staff to improve access to care and compliance with treatment, to act as a resource, sorry, it's early, for the patients and their family members, and also to really mainly decrease the emotional stress that comes with trying to navigate through the medical system, go through treatment, and some of them didn't have anyone else other than the patient navigator. The most important piece was to improve quality of life. So how do we know that this is actually somewhat working? We decided to do a small evaluation piece. Now, this isn't a research project, but we wanted to evaluate the program itself. So we used a few different ways. We did a patient satisfaction survey. We did some focus groups, and we looked at the quantitative, which was the quality of life survey. Briefly, the patient navigation survey was done just to kind of get an idea of what people thought of the program. Was it working? Is it something that they'd like to continue with? What did they think about the patient navigator? Did they feel like the person understood them, was able to help them? These are some of the questions that were asked. And as you can see, most of them agreed and strongly agreed. The scale itself was strongly agree, disagree, neutral, strongly disagree, and no opinion. And these were some of the comments on the left, which I'm not going to read out loud because I'm short on time, but a couple of the comments that were written at the bottom. The other piece was the focus groups. We conducted two focus groups asking women similar questions, but we wanted to get a more open-answered approach to that. So things like, what is your opinion about the information provided? What were your feelings after your initial contact? And is there anything different you would like to see in the support group? And this is just one that I do want to read out. And this was written by one of our patients about Maria Elena specifically. It is very complete. All doubts that I had, even ones that I did not think I would have, are explained in all the information that was given. Maria Elena also told me that if I had doubts or questions, to call her and she would go over them with me again. She was very attentive when she gave me my folder. I never called her because all of the information was so complete. That's what we're hoping for. We're hoping that, well, obviously to be able to support the women in any way that we can, but we're also hopeful that we can give them enough information and empower them to be able to make these decisions. The quality of life survey is our quantitative piece, and it allows us to look at an increase in quality of life based on certain criteria. I don't know how many of you have heard of this. This is the functional assessment of cancer therapy, and this is specific to the breast. It's actually designed for chronic illness, and there's different categories based on the different types of cancers. This one is specific to breast and asks a few questions. The test is a pre-post test questionnaire, and we're giving it at a diagnosis at 4 months and then 12 months. We have a very small sample here. Unfortunately, we're still trying, we're working on the program. The program is still somewhat in process. And so when we started doing this, we have about a year out. So we had 28 that took it at diagnosis. We had 18 that so far have taken it at 4 months, and four that have taken the third at 12 months. The results from this are put into SPSS, which then allows us to do a paired sample t-test to look at differences. Just as a brief announcement, the results of the quality of life survey actually have been mixed. We found that there was a significantly higher physical well-being score compared to baseline. We found a higher general well-being score, and we found there were no significant differences at the time in social family well-being from baseline to follow-up, which is an area we're really looking to look further into because that's the area we really want to see a difference. And then the other one was there was no significant differences in functional well-being. So the interesting thing about this is that you're looking at overall score, even though there's these four subcategories. And when looking at all of them, there was actually a very large, significant quality of life difference. So we'll look forward to seeing over the next year or so any other differences. And we're very excited to see that there's at least some difference in quality of life. And even though this is a quantitative approach, there's no substitute for actually hearing from the patient. So I wanted to give Marielena a couple minutes to just come up and talk about her experience as a patient navigator.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Marielena Mesa, and I'll give you a little testimonial. Being a patient navigator is a wonderful tool to help people in need. I can talk about lots of different cancer patients because every single case is exceptional for this program. Just to mention one of many cases, her name is Amparo. She's an extraordinary woman. She was diagnosed with cancer and has no family. She had to face this terrible diagnosis by herself. What patient navigation program did for her is little compared to what, in my opinion, she really needed in this stage of her life. Since patient was diagnosed, case managers referred her to me to then try to diminish patient emotional discomfort. Many patients, just like her, are diagnosed, and like her, they don't know what to do, and they don't know that there are several and free programs that can help in their way of healing. Help her in so many ways, for example, our incredible support group that is always good to know that someone can help and then understand what happened to her happened to a lot of women. I addressed the various barriers that would prevent her from getting timely and reasonable care. She was alone and she had to stop working due to her illness. Fortunately, the patient navigator program helped her to find a program that was helping her to pay some of her basic needs. This wonderful and courageous woman was able to survive without no relatives around. She used to tell me, all the time you call me, I feel that I'm not alone. These kind of rewards are the ones that I receive from all of my patients. Patient Navigator Program helped her to find transportation for all of her appointments, information to the food bank. She was enrolled into the program that was near to her house, so she can get at least the basic food that she needed. This patient still assists to our support group, and now she's very happy and thankful to the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Marielena. I just wanted to give brief acknowledgments to people who helped with this presentation or for the program. Dr. Sarah Feinstein, who I mentioned earlier, who's our support group facilitator and a wonderful woman to work with. She also helped with the getting the facet for us to be able to evaluate the program. Susan G. Komen for The Cure, who supports a lot of what we do. And Ben Arnold from FACET for giving us the survey without any cost, which was very nice. And then the San Diego State University Research Foundation for helping with the evaluation. And I have to apologize for my big logo there covering it. It's conversion from a Mac to a PC. So anyway, thank you very much.